AFR app is a powerful tool, but it does have limitations. You can't use it to change the oil in your vehicle or get rid of carpet stains. It won't walk the dog, won't pick up the dry cleaning, or take the kids to practice. But while you're doing those things, you can listen to your favorite AFR content through the app on your phone, smart device, or Roku. Just go to your app store or visit AFR.net. Listen to AFR wherever you go with the AFR app.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good Tuesday morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I am broadcasting today with the AFR team from Nashville, Tennessee at the Opryland Hotel here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're here for the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We'll be here all week, and we have a great lineup of guests, and we're looking forward to just a great week. I do have to say that I was asked for my ID of all things when I went to the registration and got my room. They asked me for my ID, and I was so offended.
Yeah, very racist.
I thought it was racist and misogynistic and all those other things. No, obviously, you have to have ID to do almost anything. Well, we want to talk today about the issue of trust. One of the key verses in the Bible, Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. I still remember Charles Stanley saying that was his life verse, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path. But now the question comes, not can we trust the Lord, but how do we know when we're hearing from the Lord? How do we know when we're hearing from the enemy? The enemy is not just a deceiver among deceivers. He's the master deceiver, the father of lies. And his lies so often sound like the truth. So to help me with this important discussion, the issue of trust, is my friend Dr. Phil Cook. Phil Cook is a media producer, a writer, speaker, and one who really has a heart for the church and for ministry and helps so many pastors and so many ministries navigate the difficult waters of how to make an impact in the culture. So, Dr. Phil, welcome
to
the
program. Well, it's great to be here. I'm kicking off your week of guests, I guess,
right? You are the first one.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is fun. Well, by the way, I did not know Charles Stanley, you know, said that about that verse, about trust. Yeah. That's amazing, because I just think we often forget, particularly in the context of church or ministry, trust is the single most important thing we have. You lose the trust of your congregation, you're dead.
You're done.
You're gone. You're done. And we find out very often in a crisis situation, as we've seen in the headlines so often, that one of the problems is we don't communicate well during a crisis, and the congregation starts to wonder, well, what's really going on? And you start losing their trust, and you've lost everything. So I think if I was a pastor, I'd preach on it more. I think that we need to understand the power of trust, because there's really nothing else that ties you to a single church. People can leave on a whim, as we see quite regularly. And so trust is one of the most important things you can build. And in today's skeptical, secular culture, trust is harder than ever.
It really is. You know, Phil, in the world of pastors, a pastor goes into a church, he doesn't have the trust of the people. They may have voted for him to come, but they don't know him.
Yes.
And it takes time to build trust. I heard a statement once, it's so true. It says, trust is earned. This is true in marriage, it's true in relationships across the board. Trust is earned a drop at a time. It's lost by the buckets full.
Wow, that's good.
Because you can't regain trust in a bucket full. You're going to have to do it. Consistent behavior over time will yield trust. And that's why guys that jump around to different churches, it's hard for them to ever get
It is. In many denominations, they transfer you after a few years, you know, and I can't even imagine how hard it is. You start building the trust of your congregation, you start doing, fulfilling the vision, your work there in that location, and suddenly your denomination moves you to a different church. I don't even know how that works, because that's got to be a nightmare. And they've just left out the importance, the central importance of building trust with the believers there in your community. I just think, and this is a word for CEOs, by the way. You don't have to be a Christian to understand the power of trust. If you're a CEO or a leader in your company, let me tell you something. Building trust with your team is the most important thing. Trust is the reason they'll stay late to work. Trust is the reason they'll put in that extra effort. Trust is the reason they'll go the extra mile. So building trust is, in many ways, the most important thing a leader can possibly do.
Okay, Phil, we live in a world filled with lies and liars.
Oh, yeah.
Politicians, that whole that whole area of life, the political arena, has just been overrun by liars with their lies. We had talked about your favorite governor, Gavin Newsom.
Yes.
he never met a lie he wouldn't tell.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So... how do a politician, you know, politics in general, it's a nasty business. We need Christians to be in it, but it's a compromising endeavor, which makes it hard to be a hardliner because you can't get much done. How does a guy, you're a good consultant and coach, how does a guy go in there? If I said, Phil, I want to be a politician, I want to be a governor one day or whatever. How do I do that and still maintain integrity?
I would probably say don't. No. We need godly men and women in government. There's no question about it. I wish we had more. In fact, I wish more Christian colleges and universities had political science departments that would train a generation of people to take over leadership in universities and colleges. And I think, you know, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And I think you can speak the truth without being terribly offensive, although that's more and more difficult in this culture. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't always, one of the things we see with politicians today is they just can't be honest to save their life. They just, they divert, they change the subject. I watched an interesting interview the other day with a politician, and after they went to this long-winded answer, the interviewer said, well, that was maybe the greatest pivot I've ever seen, but you still haven't answered my question.
Right.
And they're brilliant at that. They're brilliant at that. So it's a tough world out there, and we just have to figure out how to negotiate that in a godly way, because it's harder than ever.
You know, there are obviously lots of people that don't like Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, and that's putting it mildly. I mean, they just hate the guy. Trump derangement syndrome is
it's
a
real
thing.
Absolutely.
But one of the things you got to give Trump, if you're going to be honest and fair-minded, he does tell people, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
He really does follow through on it. I mean, he said he was going to secure the borders. Yep. He did that. He said he was going to get out illegals. He's doing that. Now, some people may not like how he's doing it.
Right.
But he doesn't do a lot of bait and switch. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely true. I mean, he you know, in some ways that's great. Some ways it hurts him. I think there's maybe a more deliberate, thought out way to go about it. However, you're exactly right. He does exactly what he said he was going to do. And you see a lot on social media, this is what I voted for. This is totally what I voted for. And you're right. He's alienating a lot of people because of the way he's doing it. But the fact is, you know, he's not a liar. He tells the truth. He goes ahead and does it, whether you like it or not.
Well, I had said early on when he got reelected, I said, okay, so you go to the hospital and you're eaten up with cancer and you got a 5% chance to live. They're going to have to do radical surgery. Yeah. You're going to be hurting if you survive.
Yeah.
And so I think of America like that. I mean, so to save America, you're going to have to do some radical things, and people aren't going to like
it. That's true. Well, the other thing, too, is we live in this social media age where rumors, rampant ideas, wacky stuff gets out there all the time. Numerous founders of this country said, this cannot work without an educated populace.
Right.
If our citizens aren't educated, this is never going to work. And over, I follow a couple social media feeds where people will go into these marches, you know, these anti-no kings marches and other liberal marches, and they'll just interview people. And these people are staggeringly ignorant about stuff. Right. They don't even know why they're there. And they're holding up a sign that says, no fascists. The guy will say, well, what does that mean exactly? What is a fascist? They have no idea. They can't tell him.
Right.
It's just... it's shocking sometimes how ignorant people can be out there and speak out about these issues. So it's a really difficult time to be alive.
Well, and it is. And so that's why, you know, I've been emphasizing, we had a whole program yesterday about prayer.
Yeah.
We need to be praying.
True.
Because the problems are far greater than any person can fix. I mean, God has to fix these problems. Okay, so let's pivot into the church and
trust,
the world
yep.
of the church. The issue of trust as it relates to the ministry.
I would start with not trying to be so impressive. You know, one of the things I get upset about the church with so often is we way overhype everything. Mm-hmm. I saw a Christian conference advertised the other day called the Shake the Nations Conference. And at the end of the conference, I doubt if any nations had been shook. I'm just telling you. We say that so often. We even have a term called evangelistically speaking, you know, and we describe and we over-exaggerate things. So we need to remember this is the most marketed to, pitched to, sold to generation in history. Mm-hmm. This generation can smell a con a mile away, and they're skeptical. And so this is the moment to be honest as a mm-hmm. church leader. Be honest about that conference you're doing, about the outreach you're doing, about the programs you're doing. When you're in the pulpit, this is not the time to exaggerate. So I think we start with trying to be less impressive, more factual, and being brutally honest about it. Now, maybe not brutally honest, but being mm-hmm. honest about the way things are. I think the desire to be impressive sometimes is way too much.
Yeah, that's a good point. I still remember you put something out one time on social media. This was some years ago when I first got to know you, and it was like, pastors, quit saying this sermon is going to change your life.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Because you overhype it.
Yes.
And then people can get very disillusioned because mm-hmm. it's like, but you said it was going to change my life. It didn't change.
It did.
My life.
Exactly.
Now, it can.
Yeah.
It has
exactly.
the potential to do that, but we act like this is, you know, we're on Mount Sinai and hearing
yes,
from
Revelation
God.
Is about to happen.
Yes.
Well, I would rather you underhype it and let people say, whoa, now that was incredible. That mm-hmm. had a huge impact on me. Then you tell them that's going to happen and it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So you start building trust by being realistic, not trying to overhype everything, not trying. We have a desire to be impressive. We want to let the we want to excite the congregation and motivate them, but sometimes it will come back to bite us.
Okay, so there's a church, I'll not name it, it's in Florida,
okay,
but it has a lot of Disney people that are, they can draw from. So
okay.
it has a big talent pool.
Right.
The church service looks like something you'd see at Disney World. And it's you look at that and you think, what would the Apostle Paul say about this?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like so far removed from preaching the word and worshiping, seemingly from what you can tell. Does that hurt the cause, in your opinion?
Well, you know, a lot of it depends on your community. I'm a big believer that we need to adapt to the community we're in. You have a big church, for instance, and I'm not a critic of big churches at all. I do think sometimes we go a little bit too far. Now, here's another thing. Along with it, I believe in being who you are. Don't try to be like that mega church down the street if you don't have the staff or the capability mm-hmm. or the budget. And yet so often we try so hard. I went to a Christmas program at a church, little bitty church in Los Angeles a few years ago. And they were trying so hard to be the local mega church that they had a smoke machine that they didn't know how to control. And it wasn't long before the entire sanctuary was filled up with smoke. People were choking. The performers on stage, the worship team, couldn't even get off the stage. They were lost. And it was just a catastrophe on every level. And I thought, you know what? If you're a small church, be an amazing small church. Don't try to be like a mega church down the street. So, yeah, I think being who you are is important. So in that case in Florida, I think if that's their team and I think if the congregation, that's what they like. I mean, I haven't been there, so it's hard for me to know. But I would just say don't overhype. Be who you are.
Well, and Phil, we have so many that try and be like the world. We're okay, people are watching these movies. So we're you know how the churches do the summer at the movies. And
oh, yeah. Oh, man. Don't get me started.
Well, I just don't get that.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with people hearing the truth?
That's really true. I think some, you know, very often, one of the criticisms I've heard of the church is, why do I want to go to a church and experience the same thing I get at the mall or right. at a movie theater or mm-hmm. at a rock concert? Well, I want to go there for a different reason. And right. I think it's one of the reasons we're seeing a gravitation toward Catholic churches, Eastern Orthodox churches. Mm-hmm. You know, people like the smells, the bells, the small intimate moments. I think we have a, you know, us baby boomers, we love the rock shows. I mean, right. we like the lighting and the smoke, and we love that big event type thing. But this generation is much more intimate, and they want a smaller, more, you know, spiritual experience. So I think adapting to the generations, people, you know, the Bible said God's words never change. Everything else changes. People change. Right. Trends change.
Right. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook. He doesn't go by Dr. Phil, but I like to call him that periodically.
I'm the original one.
You got a real doctorate?
Yes.
Media producer, writer, speaker, and coach, and all-around good guy. I really love Phil, and known him for a long time now, Phil, about 20 years.
It's been a long time, yeah.
And so we're talking about the issue of trust. Trust is so important. It's important in life. It's extremely important in the church. Obviously, the Bible tells us, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. You're listening to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
Candace talks about finding out she was pregnant. Thankfully, an ultrasound provided by Preborn allowed her to hear her baby's heartbeat.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
Preborn currently has clinics that do not have ultrasound machines. Would you consider a leadership gift and sponsor a machine today? These life-saving machines cost $15,000, more than most centers can afford. Your donation will save countless lives for years to come. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here with Dr. Phil Cook. We're talking about the importance of truth, the issue of truth and trust and being able to say, this person is someone that I can trust. This church is telling me the truth. And this ministry is a ministry that I can support because they are telling the truth and they're trustworthy. And we sometimes just assume that that's going to be because we're a church or whatever. But Phil, you've said that people in today's world, they don't do that.
They don't do that. They don't. You know, when I was a kid, pastors were the most trusted people in a community, generally. My dad was a pastor in Charlotte, North Carolina when I was a kid. And, I mean, he was the most trusted guy in town. Everybody who never darkened the door of a church still respected my dad. The latest polls I've seen is pastors are slightly ahead of used car dealers when it comes to trust in this culture today. So we've really dropped that. So don't think just because you've got a new gig as the pastor of First Baptist Church, you're going to automatically gain trust with people. That has to be earned. And we're talking today about some ways to make that happen.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So trust is earned a drop at a time. What are those drops?
All right, well, we talked about stop trying to be impressive, stop trying to overhype things. The next thing I would say is tell stories about people, not platforms. Okay. Very often as leaders, as pastors, we want to talk about the new building program. We want to talk about things we've done, things we're accomplishing, hardware, if you will. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. Start telling stories about people on your team who are doing an amazing job, people in the congregations whose lives have been transformed because of your message. You know, we talk about short videos, social media, Instagram, TikTok has become a platform for short videos. Let me tell you something you could do. tell those short video stories about people in your congregation whose lives have been changed because of your message. Mm-hmm. That will win people over faster than anything. They, you know, people just generally, particularly if they're new to your church, they don't care about the building program. Right. And, you know, my parents were a generation that gave to build. That's why, you know, Oral Roberts University was built in that generation. Christian mm-hmm. Broadcasting Network, Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, all these major ministries were built during that time. Today, they don't build, they don't give to build. They give for a great cause, mm-hmm. a great purpose. And so if we start featuring and telling stories about the lives of people over our plans for the new education building or our plans for the new office building or whatever, that makes a big difference. And that will help win people over much more quickly.
You know, I had a seminary professor. He taught me preaching, Wayne McDill. And he gave some of the best advice, Phil. He said this. He said, guys, when you go out into the church, you're brand new.
Yeah.
Guys tend to want to talk about what is the church here for? What are we supposed to do? He said, the problem with that is it's institutional. And nobody gets excited about institutional.
Yes.
He said, speak yes. to their hurts and their needs yeah. and how the Lord wants to change in their life, you know, work in their lives and those things. And I found that really to be true because, you know, the old expression is a truism. In every pew, there's a broken heart. If you speak to broken hearts, mm-hmm. you're going to always have an audience.
Well, the early church turned the world upside down, and they didn't have anything, any buildings to brag about. They didn't have any outreach programs. Right. They hadn't done anything except they were changing people's lives. And you could see that in the growth of the explosive growth of the early church. So all they had was talking about. In fact, it's interesting how the opening and the closing of Paul's, so many of Paul's letters are talking about, say hello to this guy and remember this guy and pray for this guy. He was always pointing out people. So I think that if we can start focusing less on hardware, really, buildings and outreaches and things like that, equipment. We need to buy new sound gear for the sanctuary and focus more on how you're changing people's lives and focus on your team. You know, very often we forget to talk about our youth leader who's accomplished this or done this or the difference he's making in the lives of your kids or other outreaches or missions outreach, things like that. I go to a church here in Franklin near Nashville who has a real focus on redeeming slaves in Pakistan, you know, from the kilns, the brick kilns over mm-hmm. there. They're essentially slaves for life because they owe a debt and they're going to have to work until that's paid off. And somehow that debt never gets mm-hmm. paid off. So we raise money to go out and redeem families from these brick kilns in Pakistan. And our congregation can't get enough of those stories. They show them on video. They talk about the people. Some of them they brought to the church. And that's just such a motivator. Our people get so excited about that. So find out those things that your people are doing or how your lives have been transformed or you know, your congregation's lives, and you talk about that, and you'll see a real difference.
Okay, so Phil, you work with lots of church leaders, lots of ministry leaders. You get to see the inside.
Yeah.
You know, so the underbelly, so to speak. So you see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
Okay, so I know for lots of people, when we talk about the issue of trust, they don't want to know things because then it's going to destroy their you know, fantasy that this is a perfect place and these people never have an argument and that kind of thing. But that's not real life.
People know it's not true. People know it's not true. I mean, any group of any, you know, people that leave the church because somebody hurt them or somebody got upset about something. You know, I just tell them, what group of people in America isn't dysfunctional? I mean, political parties, your HOA, the Elks Lodge, any group you want, the PTA, any group you want is going to have some boneheads in it. There's just going to be, you know, it's not going to work. So a church ought to be the place, you know, it's the old illusion. It's a hospital for broken people.
Right.
And so I think that one of the things I talk about a lot when I'm dealing with a crisis with churches, if they're in a sex abuse crisis or a financial crisis or some other problem, is don't try to hide things. Don't mm-hmm. try to cover things up. Very often we think, well, if we don't talk about that, you know, I want to protect their reputation.
Right,
I want to protect
right.
the church. Trust me, we live in this digital world where people will find out. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, if we leave this interview today and we drive out in the parking lot and somebody T-bones me in my car, my first instinct is to get out and yell at the guy.
Right.
But trust me, somebody will be standing on the curb with their phone videotaping that encounter, and it's going to be on the internet in 5 minutes. So we can't hide. As Christian leaders, we have to be more transparent than ever. We cannot hide anymore. So it doesn't mean we have to go into gory details,
right,
but we need to tell people the truth of what's going on, at least what you know at that time, and that's a real key. That wins trust faster than anything.
Okay, so Phil, if a guy really flames out, Robert Morris.
Yeah.
Okay, pastor at Gateway. Yes. Now, he had a thing the thing he did was criminal.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt right. about it. He's in prison now.
Yes.
Short term, but it wasn't like that was ongoing, you know,
right.
all throughout his ministry. So we got to give him credit for that. He didn't continue that. But he never should have. He should have just said, this disqualifies me from ministry. But he didn't.
No, I'm a big believer in get things out and get out in front. You know, there was a presidential candidate a number of years ago, Herman Cain. He was a pizza mm-hmm. magnate. He owned a right. pizza bar. He had an affair 20 years earlier and didn't talk about that, didn't bring it up, thinking that nobody would notice. And sure enough, at the height of his campaign, a news journalist found out, and it went public, and he immediately was forced to step down mm-hmm. because he tried to hide it. But had he opened his campaign with, you know what, I'm not a perfect person. 20 years ago, I cheated on my wife. We worked through it. My wife is a godsend. We went to counseling. We worked through it. Now we have our marriage is stronger than ever. That would have completely taken the ammo away from his critics. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer that get it out there. Be honest. Let people know what's going on. And either, you know, whether it disqualifies you from ministry or let the people decide, whatever you want. I just think that it's important that we not try to hide anything.
Right. How does the church, and I know you have your book, Church
sure.
on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis. But how does a church recover? Because a pastor can run a church into the ditch.
Yes.
He financially, morally, and they have such a blot on the name of that church
yes.
because of that. But they're not, I mean, they're not shutting down.
Right.
And they have to keep going. So they get rid of him. But then it's like, how do you rebuild
that's
that?
A great question. And that's my passion. It's why I wrote the book, Church on Trial, because, you know, once the perpetrator makes that decision, whether it's a pastor, a youth leader, a staff member, whatever, once they make that decision, I'm done with them. Let them go to counseling or prison or whatever the situation is. But my focus is the church. How do we help the church survive? And I think one of the most important things is, number one, get rid of everything, any trace of what that person has done. For instance, if it's a pastor and he's committed a grave moral sin or an abusive situation, whatever, get his books out of the bookstore, get his social media, delete those accounts, get his sermons off YouTube. Why remind the congregation over and over of what happened here? Mm-hmm. So let's start focusing on the future, not focusing on the past. And immediately start telling these stories. One of the things that I think that leaders should do to rebuild trust is show your work. I know of a church where the pastor had a sexual affair, an abusive relationship with a woman in the church, and he was forced to step down. But in his defense, he had built such an amazing church that even with him leaving and the shame and the reproach that came on them, they were able to emerge strong because they were a great church to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that telling that story of what you do, how you're impacting people's lives, getting those stories out there is a real key. And focus, you know, focus on the future. Focus on what God's called you to do. Put your hand to the plow and move forward. That's just so very, very important.
Okay, Phil, when you deal with different personalities,
yeah.
The guy that's the type A driver, Bobby Knight,
yeah.
Coach Cignetti from
yeah.
Indiana. I mean, you know what Saban, Nick Saban. I mean, you're that kind of guy. And you're called of God. You're a pastor. You have a tendency, as we've seen with the James McDonald's of the world,
true.
To be very overbearing, to be very unkind in situations.
Yes.
In your opinion, is that a recoverable flaw or is that a canceling out?
Well, miracles happen. I'm not going to cancel somebody out because I think we can all recover. That's not like having a sexual affair with somebody. We find many leaders just have a short fuse. And I think that disqualifies you from being a pastor if you can't overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been involved in situations where a pastor would just hurl profanity at his leadership team. Unbelievable stuff. And he would just get so ticked off and a short fuse, and he would blow up at his team. That's not godly leadership. That's not even close to godly leadership. Mm-hmm. So that is a problem. But, you know, through counseling, through leadership training, people can overcome that. It's going to be hard. You have to be focused. But, you know, in other cases, it's a person's nature. They're never going to change. That person probably needs to move on and sell insurance or something. I don't know, but not be a leader of a church for sure.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the guys like that get a lot done.
Yeah, they do. They do. They're drivers. And very often, particularly in a new church plant or, you know, when you're starting out or you're launching a building program, they're great to have because mm-hmm. they are the quarterback or they're the coach. They're going to push things through. But you have to be very sensitive and know. You know, great coaches like Nick Saban know when to be, you know, be quiet, work yeah. with a player personally, right. and get in that locker room and stir everybody up. So the key to leadership is knowing when to respond in different situations.
Okay, so you've dealt with lots of leaders yeah. in your career. Who are the ones that stand out to you that I would model myself after that guy?
Oh, there's a number of people that have stood out to me in many cases because, and I'll tell you, the probably the biggest reason is they had a powerful vision and they were exceptionally disciplined in their Christian life. They were people that a prayer. They were they read the Bible every day. They studied the Bible. I admire those people. Larry Stockstill is a great example at Bethany Church in Baton Rouge. Larry is a man of the Bible, and he is possibly, I've known him since college, and I've seen him grow as a pastor, and now his son has taken over the church, Jonathan, and he's just a remarkable man of God. I look around in some of the top pastors in the country today, at some time or another, they were staff members of Larry's church.
Really?
It's kind of like Nick Saban right. in Alabama. How many mm-hmm. top coaches were on his staff over the years? So I look at, those are leaders that breed other leaders, that develop other leaders, and I just love to see that. Mm-hmm. I love to see that. I look at church media leaders who have worked for me at a given time or, you know, been in my classes, and then just see them go out and do amazing things is really remarkable. So I want to see leaders that are not just leading, but they're training up another generation of leaders as well.
Okay, so in your business, when you would have someone leave yeah. for a bigger opportunity for right. them, perhaps, did you feel good about that or bad about that?
Leave the church, you mean, for another opportunity?
Well, no, leave Cook.
Leave me. Yeah. Oh, that happens a lot. No, I wrestled with that because there are clients we've worked with, churches that we've worked with for more than 20 years. And there are other churches that we've worked with for about 20 weeks. And some of it is it's a short-term problem that we can go in and help them fix right away. Let me just explain for people listening, why in the world would a church bring in an outsider like me to consult or advise or coach them? And it's because sometimes outsiders see things that people inside don't see.
For sure.
We immediately, because I've done this with so many churches over the years and ministries, that I see things that people have dealt with for years that just didn't notice. And so an outsider sometimes, John Maxwell says it's fresh eyes, bringing fresh eyes into a problem. And so I think that's a big part of what I do. And so sometimes that problem can be fixed right away in a matter of days or weeks or months. Sometimes it takes years. And it also depends. Very often we'll work with, you know, I'm a media guy. I'm a television producer. And so we work with the media outreach of churches. And so getting their social media up to speed, getting their YouTube mm-hmm. channel, getting their television program like you have mm-hmm. up to speed sometimes takes a little bit longer. And so, sure. and by the way, for what it's worth, pastors weren't taught this in seminary. Nobody knew about media right, in right. Bible college. Nobody knew about the digital world or the social media world or the crisis communication world. Nobody got taught this. So pastors just are blindsided in many cases. So it's helpful to have someone come in from the outside who can help.
Okay, so Phil, if you go back 50, 60 years,
yeah.
I mean, church scandals aren't new.
Not at all.
People just didn't know about that stuff.
That's right. The laws were murky. They were just being developed. We ought to talk about that when we come back from the break, because that's a really significant reason why so many things still are coming up. People are saying, 30 years ago, I was abused by this guy. So it hasn't been dealt with even now.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to my good friend, Dr. Phil Cook. We're talking about the issue of trust, how to build trust, how to maintain trust, how to regain trust when trust has been broken. And those things are so critical. Hey, everything in the Christian life, you can boil it down to trust. We trust the Lord. How is a person saved? By trusting the Lord with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so that is a critical, critical issue. We'll be right back after the break. Don't go away.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here talking to Dr. Phil Cook. We're talking about the issue of trust. How do you gain trust with people? How do you maintain trust? How do you regain trust if you do something stupid that causes people to say, I'm not sure I trust you anymore? Phil, you know, I was thinking about that just in marriage. You know, trust is critical. You can't have a marriage if you don't trust the other person.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're all susceptible to losing trust. We're all capable of losing trust. We have rules. I'm not a pastor, but in our company, Cook Media Group, we have rules about, you know, I don't travel with a woman anywhere. If I have to have a woman from our team at a client meeting, she travels on a different flight, stays in a different hotel, rents a different rental car. I mean, and I'll take my wife with me. So we even have rules because trust can be lost so easily. Mm-hmm. Even financially, when I come back from a trip like this at the NRB, I give my receipts to my assistant who gives them to a producer and they all go over them and then they go to our CPA who goes over them. My email, three people in my office can read my email. So that just builds a sense of trust. It'd be hard for me to arrange a rendezvous with how many people can see my calendar and see my email. So I just want to do everything I can to stop any erosion of trust from happening, because once it starts, it's hard to put a stop to
it. We had talked before the program about Philip Yancey.
Yes.
A friend of yours.
Yeah.
Okay, you were shocked as well as everybody else. Because, no, we're not trying to throw Philip under the bus, but he's not Don Juan.
Right, no, he's... Yeah, he's not a hunk, I would say. But, you know, and Philip's story, who I consider one of the greatest writers of our generation, Christian writers of our generation, is an example that we all need to be insanely careful of this. It could happen to anyone. He's 78.
Right.
And he's 78 years old. He's had an 8-year affair. And it just... You know, the devil is always out there. Satan is always out there prowling around, and we just have to be more careful than ever. We just live in an age where the internet makes pornography so accessible, our iPhone. We just have to be more careful than ever and do whatever we can to put up a blockade that will help stop that before it starts.
Okay, I've always wondered about this. Bill Hybels, who started Willow Creek and was considered the leadership guru, kind of like a pastor John Maxwell, kind of guy. So it comes out that he was unfaithful to his wife, and he was hitting on more than one woman. He has never, to my knowledge, never made that right. I mean, Philip Yancey has at least said what I did was wrong, and I'm out of ministry because of this, and, you know, it finishing on a really sour note. How do you recover at 78? How do you recover from that? But why do you think it is a guy that built his whole career on leadership then doesn't step up to the plate when that's needed?
I think it's hard to say. I don't know the inside of that situation. I've never met Bill. But it is the pressure when you're a leader at that level is got to be so incredibly huge. Whether you're Robert Morris or Bill Hybels or anyone like Ravi Zacharias is another example. I think the thought is, let me just disappear into oblivion and just let's get it off the radar for the time being. But I do admire Philip. He wrote a very eloquent letter published in Christianity Today and in some other sources about that what he did was wrong. He regrets it, the damage it caused, and he was going to step aside. You know, there's a number of pastors I know that feel like you get one chance to lead God's people. You blow that and you go to work at, maybe it's time to go to Home Depot for years.
Sure.
You know, there's often a rush to restore. Right. You know what, let's just have a rush to get right with with God first and
right.
take care of the victim if there's a victim involved. So I think that I admire Philip enormously for stepping up after, you know, that kind of grievous sin. And he called it a grievous sin. He called it what
right.
it was.
Right.
And so that it takes a lot of courage, I think, to step up and know that this is the last thing people are going to remember about me. It's mm-hmm. terrible, but I need to honor God and do the right thing.
So in a situation like that, Philip Yancey wasn't a pastor, but he,
right.
he gives Christianity a black eye because he's got a lot of clout. When a pastor does that, as we were saying, the church doesn't shut down, hopefully not.
Right, right.
But the church gets a black eye, and you have to rebuild trust in the community, and that can take years.
It can. I've seen churches that did shut down because of it. When I was writing my book, Church on Trial, a woman who was the bookkeeper at a church, everybody said she was the most trusted member of the church. She had kept the books for like 20 years. One day, a $75 check bounced, and they discovered she had stolen almost $600,000 from the church over
wow.
a 10-year period. She had put her kids through college. She bought a new house. Amazing. And now she's going to go to jail, and she's required to pay it back, but she could never repay it back. She spent it all.
Right.
And so that church had to close its doors because it couldn't recover from that debt.
Wow.
And so that's what breaks my heart, absolutely breaks my heart. And so I think this is devastating. This is real, and this is people's lives that are being impacted. I think mm-hmm. we need to take godly principles seriously. We need to raise the bar when it comes to Christian leadership out there.
Okay, let me ask you this, Chris.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Phil. I had Chris on my head, but pastors that go in, and I've seen this a
sure.
lot. They have these grandiose visions,
yeah.
and we want to pray big. We want to believe God for big things, but we don't think it through. We don't count the cost. We don't really pray through this enough to know, is this really where God's leading me, or is this something I think is cool? You know, you follow
yes,
the latest
right.
fad. You spend
yes.
all this money, and you get the church in a financial ditch.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, you're called to another congregation.
Yeah, I laugh, but it's sad.
That happens a lot.
It does. It happens a lot. And that, you know, there's numerous scriptures about planning, first of all. There's numerous scriptures calling us to plan well. And so many pastors have big visions and don't know how to make it happen and do that very thing. They run the church into the ditch. They suddenly feel called to move on. And I just think that's tragic. Now, this is a role the elders need to step up, I think. This is a role where, do you have elders that are real elders? Or are they just... you know, decoration.
Rubber stamps.
Rubber stamping everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable in a church where elders rubber stamp everything. We need to have, if we really understand leadership for the church today, it's not a pastor-only driven thing. It's got to be elder-driven. It's got to be staff-driven. The pastor is a visionary, and he's the captain of the ship. However, there needs to be counterbalances. And to see a church get run into the ground like that, just, again, breaks my heart because it's so tragic.
Well, the king had counselors.
Yes.
And he could bounce things
yes.
off of them, and they could say, hey, this is...
Even David had Nathan who called him out.
Right.
You know, so who is called... If you're a pastor listening to this, who's the person who can call you out? Who's the person that you give permission to call? You know, I'm not a pastor, but I have numerous people in my company that feel perfectly called to call me out when I'm an idiot. And it's annoying, but I love it. I'm thrilled with that because I want to know before I do something stupid. So it happens to me a lot, and it needs to happen in the church more.
Well, I learned from my pastor, Damon Shook, and he didn't ever say this, but you could just see it modeled in his life. He had a lot of trust with the congregation because he didn't make stupid decisions.
Yes.
He was wise in how he did. Now, he wasn't he wasn't crossing the Red Sea, perhaps.
Right.
You know, he wasn't doing all these things.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, either we're going to... The guy that bought the mall in Shreveport. Did
yes.
you remember that?
Yes.
Rod Masteller, I mm-hmm. think was his name. He had said, this is either going to be the greatest move or the stupidest move in my ministry. And it proved to be not
good.
Good.
Yeah.
Unless the Lord is really leading you to do something
yeah.
like that,
yeah.
Wisdom says don't put yourself in that situation.
Well, it's funny you say stupid decisions. In my book, I have a chapter on RSDs, really stupid decisions. And I find them in a remarkable number of cases where a crisis happens. And, you know, for instance, one pastor thought to be more productive, I'll have my assistant move into my house with my wife and I. And that way we can work, you know, around the clock. Well, your wife is not around all the time. Well, guess what happens? And sure enough, it happened to him. You know, another major evangelist in America owned a chain of massage parlors. Who thought that was a good idea? Just, and maybe they sound okay at the time. I looking back, I'm baffled, but maybe they sounded good at the time. But I see over and over and over pastors and leaders just make really, really dumb decisions. I guess there's no one to say, wait a minute, pastor, let's think about
okay, this. So, Phil, for me, when it comes to things like the house you buy,
yes,
the cars you drive, I've always said, you know, I love nice cars. Lexus, sure. I thought a Lexus is a great car.
Yeah.
And somebody said, well, you ought to get one. I said, I would never buy a Lexus because people would say,
yeah,
we're paying that guy way too much money. And so you can drive a $70,000 truck.
Yes.
I mean, and nobody says boo about that. It can cost more than the Lexus.
Exactly.
But it's just perception is reality.
Perception,
for people.
It really is. But in this digital age we live in, perception has become more important than reality, and that really does matter. So that's why it's so important to be honest. Getting stuff out there, you know, getting ahead of the problem before it can actually, you know, cause an issue is absolutely critical.
Okay, Phil, let's delve into the issue of AI.
Yeah.
Okay, because AI has changed the landscape of what is true and what is not. We can have, you know, Pray.com is a good ministry partner with us, and Matt Potter's a great friend. But, you know, he can have me speaking in Russian and Chinese and all these things, and the lips match. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
And that can be a good thing.
Yeah,
but it could also be used to be a bad thing. I could say things. I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's true.
They could have me saying whatever.
AI will be the most challenging technology of our time. There's no question about it. I've experimented extensively. We have AI apps that we use for budgeting, for presentations to clients, for scheduling, all kind of things. We use it a lot. But at the same time, we have to be insanely careful of it. I mean, the large language models, which AI draws from, pull from everywhere. You have no idea where this information is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a very well-known Christian AI platform, and I typed in, I'm a 14-year-old boy, and I'm in love with my male coach, and I want to have sex with him, but my parents disapprove because they're Christians. Can you help me come up with a reason to defend that? And bang, 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 it's printed out all the reasons why it was okay, mm-hmm. things I could tell my parents. And this was a Christian AI app.
Mm.
And so you have to be very careful because of where it's drawing its information. It doesn't mean we can't develop Christian AI mm-hmm. apps in the future, but right now they're pulling from a lot of different places. They're not a walled garden where we can say, look, only pull from Christian books or Christian sources. It pulls from everywhere. And as parents, I would just say, be careful about how much your kids use AI, and you should mm-hmm. be monitoring that because you need a godly monitor on top of this right now. It's very important.
Phil, with the time we have left, let's talk about healthy churches. You work with a lot of churches. I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can tell pretty quickly if the church is healthy or the church is not.
Yeah, we never know what lurks in the heart of people. We see leaders all the time that fall, that everybody thinks, I can't even imagine how that could happen, and I'm shocked. But at the same time, there are real marks of a healthy church, and you see it financially when a church is on, you know, financial footing. You see it in the outreach programs. You see it in the lives of the people that attend the church. You see it in a pastor. You know, so often, I want to see a pastor that at the end of the service, he'll walk down. You know, Jack Graham has Prestonwood Church in Dallas, 7,000 seats in that auditorium. He's got 20,000 members. But you know what? He's not escorted on and off the stage.
No.
At the end of a message, he walks right down and wades into the crowd and greets people, hugs them, loves them. And that's a mark of a great pastor, somebody who's, you know, connected with people. And so I think that you see things like that are really healthy signs of a church. And, of course, you see lives change. That's probably the biggest thing. Churches grow for a reason, and they stagnate for a reason. And so I think it's so important to look at those marks that define a healthy church.
Phil, what would you say to the guy that's pastoring a church of 50 people or 100 people and is discouraged? And, you know, Those kind of churches don't get the publicity, right? I mean, nobody's talking about them. But that's what we have in America. Most of the churches are small. Southern Baptist Convention, most of those churches are, you know, 100 people or less.
My wife served on the National Board of the Salvation Army, and they're building churches in really hard places. They put churches in inner city places and ghettos and very difficult, because that's what they're about, is reaching disadvantaged people. Those churches are never going to grow beyond 30, 40, 50 people, but they stay faithful. And I'm a big believer, first of all, if you're a pastor of a small church and you're frustrated, it seems to have hit a lid, start engaging social media. Start talking about what you're doing. Don't, you know, again, don't brag about the buildings or what your vision is. Start highlighting people. Start talking about the gospel. Stop using social media as a megaphone to talk about you, and start using it for ministry. Start ministering to people through social media, because that allows you to get your message outside the walls of the church to people who would never in a million years darken your church, darken the door of your church. And suddenly people will, you'll start engaging with people. So there's a lot of ways to do that. And I would encourage, and by the way, small churches, sometimes they're doing a remarkable job in an amazingly difficult place, and I'm all for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Phil, thank you so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure.
Tell our listeners how they can connect with you.
PhilCooke.com. I'm Cook with an E. PhilCooke.com is kind of the hub of everything I do. You can find my books there, my blog, all the things that we do.
You have 10 books?
10 books, yeah. Thank you.
I guessed on that.
I'm working on a new one with AI, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. Next time we'll talk about that.
What's it called?
It's called Created to Create. It's like a book for creative professional people who are Christian creative people.
Well, cool. So. All right. Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to Phil Cook. And listen, trust is the key. And so trust in the Lord. I'll end with that. Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.